Is there anybody else that didn't get one here this morning? Give me a paper. Anyone else? Okay. We're looking at the question of where are the dead, and for the benefit of those who weren't here this morning, we're looking at this two ways. Number one, that there are those who are dead spiritually. We talked about that this morning. The second thing is that there are those who may be dead physically, and what's the outcome of those? And kind of summing up what we said this morning, there are a number of people who are curious as to what would happen to us after we might die physically. A lot of people have questions about that. But it seems odd that they don't really care to hear or to investigate the fact of being dead, spiritually speaking. You'd think that there would be interest in both, since both are concerned one with the other. If you are dead spiritually, you end up one place. If you are not dead spiritually, if you're alive spiritually, there's the opportunity for another. Now, none of those things, as we point out this morning, are absolutely guaranteed. Things can change. Now, on the handout sheet, we got as far as number 9, and we're going to start there after that. We mentioned some of these things this morning, but now we're going to look at them a little bit more. At death, there is a separation of the body and the spirit. I got to get the pointer over here. And you find mention of this in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And verse 7, which is one of those passages that's well known. It says that the dust shall return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. The context leading up to verse 7 is describing older years and how things change and how we become. Until finally it gets there and then begins to talk about, actually, about death in verse 7. In James chapter 2 and verse 26, again, this is a passage that I'm sure that we're familiar with. This passage tells us that, to get there, for that as the body without the spirit is dead, so all faith, so faith without works is dead also. The body without the spirit, that's where death comes. Spirit leaves the body. What happens to the body? Well, it goes back to God. And it's in the charge of God. At this particular point, there's really nothing else that we might be able to do to change anything. It's all turned over to God, and God will do the right thing. God is just. He will do as the Scriptures indicate, based on what we have done in this life. And so that's what you see. Now, as we were talking about this morning, there's those who are faithful. They're in the kingdom. They've come out of the power of darkness, been translated, transferred to the kingdom of Christ. There are those that are faithful. They go to a place that's described as paradise, Abraham's bosom. We'll look at that in just a short while. There may be those, though, that are in the kingdom that become unfaithful. Well, the unfaithful don't have the same promise then that those who are faithful. They go to a place, Tartarus, or a place of torments, as it may be called. And we'll look at that in a moment. The person who is outside of Christ, sometimes we call them an alien, the alien sinner, who's never obeyed the gospel. We looked this morning about them. They don't have a good future ahead for them. They go to the same place as the unfaithful would. That would be Tartarus or torments. Infants who die, and sometimes that really is something that comes up. I'll have to admit, I believe the Scriptures teach different from what a lot of other religious groups might teach. The Scriptures teach that we're to become like children, for of them is the kingdom of heaven. Now, that means that infants aren't born in sin and totally depraved and all that other. Why would we want to become that? And why would Jesus say, that's something that you ought to do? Well, that's not what he means, because the idea that infants are these desperate sinners is not true. But those who die, now they're not saved, so to speak, but they're safe. They haven't sinned. And then they would be in the Hadean realm or paradise, Abraham's bosom. Now we're going to be discussing and probably using, and it depends whether you're looking at an Old Testament passage or a New Testament passage, different words are used. I think that's kind of obvious. First of all, it's written in different languages. And sometimes they're translated into the English language without a whole lot of scrutiny involved. And I think that presents a lot of problems. I know it presents a lot of problems in the King James Version, which is what I have tonight. And there are some of them, even newer translations, that set about to, you know, make everything as accurate as possible. Even they miss the mark. For example, there are two words in the King James Version that are often translated as hell. One of them is usually the word Gehenna. And it means, you know, hellfire, the ultimate destination of the wicked. The other word is the word Hades, which doesn't necessarily mean that. But it means the total of the unseen realm. Why they were both translated the same way, I have no idea. Newer translations will usually translate the Hades word as Hades and the Gehenna word as hell, and they make a distinction. But even some of them fail to do that. I believe the English Standard Version fails in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, to make that distinction. After making it every place else accurately, they miss it there, unless they've changed in newer revisions. But last time I looked, they were still missing it. But anyway, that's the unseen realm. And it's described in the Old Testament by the word Sheol. You'll see that sometimes in newer translations. And sometimes there will be those, or it might have in a footnote, it might have, you know, Sheol or the grave. Well, that's exactly the idea. It means, you know, the abode of the dead. And, you know, and we say, well, the dead are in the grave. Or, you know, something similar to that. Even those that may not have necessarily been buried in a grave, we still say that in an accommodative sense. So Hades or Sheol that we'll be looking at tonight, that's the abode of the dead. Where are they? You know, they're unseen. Even in some Greek literature. Now, granted, it might be influenced considerably by, you know, mythology and other things like that. They understand that there's an underworld for the dead. And they even have some, in some cases, different levels of it and so on. I'm not going to, you know, verify that or say that that's accurate. But their idea of having the underworld, the unseen, where the dead spirits go, that does coincide with things that you find in the scriptures. Now, the very first thing we want to look at when we think about that there are those that die and they go to the unseen realm of Hades or Sheol, again, depending on which side of this it's on. But if we want to go to Luke chapter 16, that's the first place. In Luke chapter 16, now starting in chapter 16 and you know, for a considerable ways, it starts... Luke chapter 16, about verse 19, goes to the end of the chapter. It's the case of the rich man and Lazarus. Now, before I begin, I'm always reminded. I was mentioning this to Brother Bob before services. We have a friend of ours, a dear friend. I mean, he's just like a grandfather to our children, who will address the account of the rich man and Lazarus. And he'll say, now these are his words, he'll say, well, that's just a parable. Now, whether it's a parable or a real account, you know, you thrash that out on your own. But he always says it's just a parable. And I think in the back of his mind, he wants to be kind of dismissive of the things that are found in this account. I have no idea why. He never goes into it, but that's what he'll say. And his name is Homer. And I will always say to him when he does that, I said, Homer, even if it's a parable, it's still true. All the parables are true. Birds lodge in a tree. Fish get caught in a net. Women make bread. A sower goes out into the field. All the rest of these things are all true. It's not, well, that's just a sower. Or that's just a parable, meaning, well, that's just, you know, there's some things in there that just aren't necessarily so. Well, no, that's not it. The things that you find in there, they are so. And again, it is Lord that brings this up and tells us about this. And I don't think he was just making it up out of whole cloth. It was something that was actually real, factual. Verse 26. Now, we'll be looking at other things in there. Now, it talks about where the rich man was and Lazarus was. Lazarus is in Abraham's bosom. The rich man, he's over here, and he's in the place of torment. And then there's this that you find. Besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed. Now, that's between Abraham and Lazarus and the rich man, us and you. There's a great gulf fixed so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. We can't go there, you can't go here. We're where we are, and we're going to remain here. And we're not going to pass back and forth. I can't come over there and get somebody, and somebody can't come over here and get somebody and take them back and forth. That doesn't work that way. Now, they're going to remain this way, which we'll see in a little bit, until the time of the second coming. But this is all fixed. So there's a great gulf that's fixed between the two. So in the unseen world, there's an understanding of divisions in the unseen world, which would also extend on even into judgment, really. I think the mention that there ought to be a line right there, well, that might be, you know, accurate thing to consider because they don't cross over there either. Now, someone may say, well, doesn't that mean that the folks down here, if they realize where they're at in torments, they know what the end of them is going to be? Well, that's right. The same as those folks up there might realize the end of them and where they might be. That's right. That's fine. No argument about that. But even though they might know this, but they're all still awaiting the judgment. And it still doesn't change anything, the fact that they know about this. And really, now, that's not some extraordinary thing. Because before they ever get to this place or that place, long before that, when they're over here in the world and alive, they already know this. They already know the possibility of this. And there's only one of two places that we're going to end up. So, it's not something that's revolutionary that, you know, oh, look, well, we ended up over here in Tartarus and it's, oh, that's kind of a surprise or something. No, it's not. There's a lot that's said about that going clear back even into the Old Testament. So there's a separation between the righteous and the wicked in Hades or Sheol. The righteous are in what's called and referred to as paradise. Or it's called Abraham's bosom. Look at Luke chapter 16, verse 22. The beggar, that would be Lazarus, died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. Now, yes, this is the only place where you find mention of it as Abraham's bosom. Okay, fine. But now, how many times would it have to be mentioned to be taken seriously? I think it would only take one time. Why would it have to be a dozen times or something of that nature? I don't know. I don't think it has to. One time would be a plenty. How many times did Jesus say, upon this rock I will build my church? Well, he said it one time. Is that not enough? That's enough. Yes. And so one time's enough. It would be enough, you know, on anything to take something in a serious way. Now, also, this particular place is not just called Abraham's bosom. If you look at Luke chapter 23 and verse 43, that's what it says right there. I realize people in the back probably can't read that. But these are the words of Jesus on the cross that he said to the thief. What did he say to him? He said, today you will be with me in paradise. Now he used that realm, meaning the realm of the unseen, of the dead. And Jesus did die, and the thief would die, and today you'll be with me in paradise. So there's the usage of these things. Now, Acts chapter 2 and verse 27. Let's take a look there. Because thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. And if you have a newer translation, it doesn't have the word hell there. The King James does. It has, you will not leave my soul in Hades. With the idea that, well, yes, it's a place where might go, but it's the soul's not going to stay there. Showing us that it's not a permanent residence in that place. Then also, in verse 31, he, seeing this before, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in hell or Hades. Neither did his flesh see corruption. And so, well, that's kind of like Jesus said, you'll be with me in paradise. But again, that's just a temporary place. Jesus wasn't there very long because he was raised from the dead, remember? And so, but again, that's the idea of that's where those who die go. For however long period of time that is. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, he's speaking about the body here, we have a building of God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Well, not this body, but it'll be another one. For in this we groan. Now that's the idea of yearning. You know, a real deep yearning for something. Earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven. If so be that we, being found clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened. Not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life, looking forward to something. A time when it won't be this mortal body anymore that we'll be in, living in, but something different, something to look forward to, something that's better, something that will satisfy the yearning that all of us have. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 1 through 4, Paul writes, it is not expedient for me, doubtless, to glory. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I knew a man in Christ. Now that's important. We're talking about a man in Christ. Not talking about just anybody. A man in Christ. A Christian. A disciple. A believer. About 14 years ago, whether in the body I cannot tell, or whether out of the body I cannot tell, God knoweth, such a one caught up to the third heaven. Now, in the mind of folks at this time, especially the Jewish mind, the heavens out here had kind of three levels to them. There was the first one, where you saw birds and clouds and other things like that. Then there was that which was beyond that scope, and that would be like the sun, the moon, stars. That would be the second heaven, the first heaven being where the birds and clouds are at. The third heaven would be the abode of God. And so this man was carried up to the third heaven. That's what he'd be referring to. And you'll see that's what it is as we go on. And I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth. Now, what he means there is how the revelation came to him. And here we go in verse 4. How that he was caught up into paradise. That's that third heaven. And that's the same word that Jesus used. Remember? In the unseen realm. And while he was there, he heard unspeakable words, which is not lawful for a man to utter. Different, glorious things, wonderful things. And this man that he's mentioning here, whether he's mentioning himself or not, I don't know, could be, but he's saying here it was something that this man had a glimpse of paradise and the unseen realm. And to think about that, and to think about there's even greater things beyond, I think just, you know, goes almost beyond description. Now the passage, and I mentioned this earlier in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18. Now we know this passage, and here's the thing. A lot of times we know about the first part of it, and we stress that. But I think sometimes the second part of it, we kind of pass over it. And sometimes we pass over it kind of quick because we're not really sure about the latter part of that. Well, it says, I say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. Now, we'll go after that one, and we'll stress that. Now, about the last part. And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Again, that should be the gates of Hades. What's he talking about there? What's he mean there? Well, Hades is the unseen realm. It's where the dead go. How about this? He's talking about the grave. Now think about it a minute. I'm going to build my church, and the grave shall not prevail against it. Now this is what he means by the latter part. I'm going to build my church. I've labored all this time to lay down all the groundwork, all the foundation and everything. The time is right. The church will be built, and there's nothing that's going to get in the way. Nothing's going to stop that. Even if I die a physical death, even if I go to the grave, it won't stop it. That's what he means. And we find out when we go through the rest of the story, here's Jesus, crucified, died. And did his death stop things? No, it didn't stop things, did it? As a matter of fact, his death and then his resurrection, his conquering death, strengthened things. A lot of times in movements, if the leader dies, you know, it's all over. I'll tell you what, you can read somewhat of the end of World War II. It's just chaos in Germany and Italy. But one thing happened for sure. War was over in Italy when Mussolini was captured, killed, and then hung up like a slab of meat for everybody to see. Different from Hitler, and they never got to see that. But they got to see that. And as far as Italy and the Italian army and everybody involved, it was over with his death. Death has a finality to it. And a lot of times with movements and other things like that. But that's not the case with Christianity. The death of our leader, Jesus Christ, did not mean it was the end of everything. It was actually kicking things into overdrive. And new things. And opening up things. More so than ever before. So that's what he means. That death's not going to stop anything here. But now, you know, Jesus did go. You know, we've seen now two passages, and this one I think also refers to the fact that Jesus died. Now, Revelation, you almost have to go to Revelation on some of these things because there are some good points made in Revelation. In Revelation chapter 6, verse 9, and 10, when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and the testimony which they held. And they cried with loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? In other words, we're not dwelling on the earth. We're not there. But they're crying out for, you know, vengeance on this. The Lord's the one that can actually hand out the vengeance. It belongs to Him, not to us. But they're crying out for this, and this is the souls of those who had been slain. They're dead. They're not dwelling on earth. Where are they? Well, again, they're in the unseen realm. That's the voice from the unseen realm crying out this way. And also, if there's anyone who ever entertains the idea that once you die, you don't know anything anymore, when you go to... Boy, we had a whole bunch of folks like that out there. That if you die and you go off into reward, you don't know anything after that. And I'm thinking, what in the world would be the point? You go out and you don't know a thing. And they had their reasons for it, which were just completely off the wall and unfounded. And I always bring up this passage right here. These folks who had died, and they're not in the land where, you know, a dwelling on earth, they knew things. They knew things. They pretty well knew what was going on. And so they cry out this way. But you can't get anywhere. You know, well, I don't mean this sarcastically or to be mean, but you can't get anywhere with people that won't listen. And so you can look at that and explain it, and, you know, that's the best you could do. Psalm 139 and verse 8, I believe it is. Yeah. Psalm 139, verse 8. If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell or Sheol or the grave, behold, thou art there. God's there. No matter where it's at, here, there, God's there. You know, He knows everything that's going on. He knows who's who. He knows where everybody's at and so on. So the righteous are in paradise or Abraham's bosom. The wicked, on the other hand, are in Tartarus or torments. Now we'll look at this and see where this wording comes from. But first we want to look at Luke chapter 10 and verse 15. Luke chapter 10, verse 15, where Jesus is speaking to Capernaum and saying, "Thou, Capernaum, which are exalted to heaven, shall be thrust down to hell," or Hades. And, you know, there you can see kind of a comparison of the two. All of the acclaim in this realm, but then look what the future holds, and it's not going to be acclaim there. But again, that shows us about being thrust into Hades, into the unseen realm, and not in the good place. Luke chapter 16, back to the parable, if you want to think it's a parable, back to the account of the rich man and Lazarus in verse 23. The rich man was buried, if you remember back in verse 22 and verse 23, and in hell or Hades, he lifted up his eyes. He can do something over there. He can see things, and he's in torments. And let me tell you, he knows he's in torments because later on he said he wished that Lazarus could dip his finger in water and touch the tip of his tongue. So he knew what was going on. And he said that he sees Abraham afar off on the other side of the gulf, and Lazarus was in the bosom of Abraham. So he sees this. So he's over there in the place of verse 23, torments. It's described for us. Now the Tartarus comes from a Greek word that you find in 2 Peter chapter 2. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 through 9. If God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell. Now, that's not hell, that's not Gehenna, it's not Hades either. It's actually a word that comes from the Greek word Tartarus. It's a derivative of that. And this is a word that's taken out of everyday Greek literature to mean the unseen world, or the grave, or something along that line. But here you see it's being used to discuss that, and one aspect of it, that it's cast them down to this, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. So they haven't gone to Abraham's bosom here. They've gone to the place of torments, which is what Tartarus is. And then he goes on to talk about the old world and how he spared the old world and brought in the flood upon the world to be ungodly. God knows how to deal out judgment. And the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, he knows how to deal out judgment. And then what? In verse 7, he delivered just Lot, righteous Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. And again, God knows how to deal out reward for the righteous. For that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. That's why they're going to that place over there, because of their unlawful deeds. The Lord, it says in verse 9, knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and to reserve the unjust until the day of judgment to be punished. So he knows all about this. But now, did you notice there? To reserve the unjust until the day of judgment to be punished. They're reserved. They're waiting judgment. Like these up here are waiting judgment. You know what most people think today? Most people think today, I don't know where the idea comes from. I have no idea, but it's a very popular idea. You die, zip, you're off to heaven, or it's hell. The minute you die. I've seen this, I've heard it. Oh, look, they closed their eyes in death and they instantly went to be with the Lord. Well, that would be true up to a point, but I think sometimes it's off of the idea, oh, this one went to heaven and things of that nature. Heaven and hell are places that individuals who've been resurrected and reunited and all that will go after the judgment.
It doesn't happen at the point of death. And I'm pretty sure about this. I know a number of people who have died. I've done funerals for those who are members of the church. I've done funerals for those who are not members of the church. And you know what? They died. All of them. Now, what happened to them? I believe they went off to the unseen world to await the judgment. I think that's what the scriptures tell me. Now, someone says, well, I think they went instantly to heaven and hell. When was the judgment then? When was this? When did it take place? Did the Lord return? Did I miss it? I don't think anybody will miss it. But I mean, it's time. See, it's time to be consistent with what the scriptures teach and what we might tell and say to others. And I think sometimes we miss out on that consistency.
So all these are waiting. Even as he says there, you know, how about this? How about the angels that sinned and others like this and so on? What about over in Jude verse 6? In Jude verse 6, if we look over there real quick, Jude verse 6 has this. It's somewhat similar to 2 Peter. The angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he has reserved, again, reserved. They're waiting something. In everlasting change under darkness, what are they waiting for? The judgment of the great day. Well, there it's a little plainer. So they're waiting a judgment of the great day. The wicked, what about the righteous? Well, they're waiting the great day too, because you know what? It didn't come. There's not going to be a judgment day for the righteous and then another one later on for the wicked. No, everyone's waiting for this. Which brings us to our next point, which after all this, we see everybody that's where they're at, where they're waiting, and then comes the judgment. And that's what we want to look at. It's sometimes called a general resurrection. I'm going to speed up here. I'm not going to read the passages from Daniel or from Acts 24. But let's go to John. Let's look at that one. John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29. In John chapter 5, verse 28 and 29, and I know that we probably heard these used before in talking about the judgment, where it says, marvel not at this, the hour is coming in the which all that are in the grave shall hear his voice and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. It's a general resurrection because everybody's raised. All at the same time. Everybody's raised. And you can think about this, and you know, it talks about other things related to that. How the dead are called, Revelation chapter 20, verses 12 and 13. I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. Books were opened. Another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which are written in the book according to their works. The sea gave up the dead which were in it. Death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them. And where they were judged, every man according to their works. You see all this? You know, it's going to be that, you know, the dead are going to be raised, great and small, whoever they are. The sea gave up the dead. You know, I look at that and I think to myself, the sea that gave up the dead. Sometimes people are buried at sea. And sometimes people fall overboard and their bodies are never found. That's happened a lot. I look at sometimes a shipwreck. Something like, you know, the Titanic going down. And to think how many bodies were found and how many weren't. And then I think about something like, you know, other things of that nature. And never found again. Planes flying over the ocean, they go down. Never found again, not a trace of anything to this very day. After perhaps, you know, 70, 80 years, nothing. Nothing. What about that? And so the bodies, they fall into the water, and let's say that, you know, 2,500 years ago, there was some ship of some navy in the world over there in the Mediterranean, and the ship went down 2,500 years ago, and all those on board perished, and they all went under the water. Bodies, some of the bodies never found. What happened to them? They're not still down there. Not down there as bodies or skeletons. That would be rare if that would be the case. What happened? Well, they finally were dissolved into trace elements, or other scavengers of the sea came along and ate the body. That's right. So they don't exist anymore. Well, not in our idea of existence, no. But the power of God is so great that He can raise those who died in the sea. Yeah. How about this? I had a fellow ask me one time about cremation. He was all excited about it, and he thought that, oh, cremation is something that's wrong. You know, why we do away with our body, and then he said, what about the resurrection? I said, you know, God will take care of that. I said, you know, for centuries they didn't embalm people. What do you think happened to somebody like Abraham when he was taken back there, you know, to the caves and buried in there? What do you think happened to him? You think his body's still there? No. What's happened to it? It finally just disappeared. That's what happens to us. What is it? It says we go back to the dust from where we were created. And so God can create a body out of dust, didn't He, or not? Isn't that where Adam came from? And we go back to Him and back to the dust? Yeah, that's what will happen to us. We might delay it somewhat, but that's what happens. And I tried to tell him, we're not to be concerned about our bodies and what happens to them after death. We're not to be concerned what we're doing with them while we're alive, but not that. It's the soul that matters. God's going to prepare a different body than flesh and blood for us. And the soul will be reunited with that. You know, not the body of flesh. I'm pretty sure in the passages we read this morning, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it says, flesh and blood shall not inherit the kingdom of heaven. It's not going to be our flesh and blood body. It says He's going to prepare for us a body that's not like this corruptible body. Different. We won't know how we will be, but we will be like Him. And God's going to take care of all that. You know why? Because He's got the power to do it. He does. No matter who it is. No matter what the circumstances are. I think about those people in the Twin Towers on 9/11 that their bodies were just completely obliterated. Never, hardly a trace. Not even enough to run DNA. On some. There's just no record of hundreds. What'll happen? They'll be raised too. How about those people where atomic weapons were dropped in World War II? Vaporized in seconds from the fireball. They'll be raised too. Because God has that kind of power. Now, we live in a time where it's popular, even sometimes for members of the church, to dismiss or diminish, or marginalize the power of God. But we should never do that. We should never discount miracles and try to say, well, that doesn't jive with science. Uh-huh. Science tell you about raising a body up out of the dust of the ground? No. So what do you, well then, if science says that can't happen, then you know what? It never happened. I think God's greater than science. I had somebody tell me one time when I was talking about creation. Afterwards, come up to me, a college graduate, quite proud of his education. Came up and said, you know what? He said, I listened to you talking about creation and miracles and things like that. I want you to know that my college professor would not be impressed. Imagine my surprise. I don't imagine that he would be impressed. I didn't say it, but I thought it. At the time and later, down to this day, I could listen to his college professor explain to me where man came from. I wouldn't be impressed either. But I'd be impressed with what we find in the book of God. And I think we should be. And I think we ought to hold it in reverence and not try to discount the power that He has to be able to do these things when it comes to the resurrection. It's far beyond anything that we can imagine. Now what will happen is that those who are alive at His coming in 1 Corinthians chapter 51, verse 52, they'll be there. All will be there. Did you ever notice in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, I'm not going to read all of it, but it talks about how the trump of God will sound, and it goes on to say that, well, now the dead are going to rise, and those who sleep in Jesus will God bring with them. So the dead in Christ will rise, and Jesus bringing some back with Him. So what's going on here? Well, we've got these ones out here. They're rising up. They're rising up with that new body that's been created. And what's Jesus bringing back over here? He's bringing back the souls of them. The spirits that have gone back to God. At the resurrection, they'll be reunited with this spiritual body, and that's when they'll be judged at that time, when all that happens. So it all comes down finally, you know, to a point. All these ones that have been waiting, everything, it's all working together. God's the orchestrator of it and everything. And however long a time it takes, doesn't make any difference. It's all on God's plan, and all this will ultimately take place. I've got several other scriptures, but I'm just going to look at the ones in Matthew chapter 25. When the judgment comes, and the judgment will be based on what we've done, the deeds, all the things that we've done according, whether it be good or bad. Romans chapter 14, verse 21, I think it is, and 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10 tell us this. But in Matthew chapter 25, we come over here to this part of it. If you go from verse 31 through 46, it's the parable of the sheep and the goats, the separating of the sheep and the goats. And what you see as you get down through that and get to the end of it, there are those that are said in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 46, and this is the conclusion of the whole matter, these go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. So at the judgment, there it is, the spirits, the souls are reunited with this resurrected body, all those in the general resurrection, and then comes the judgment. And it's a final judgment. A final judgment means it has finality to it. No changes made after this. This is it. Everything's ready. And then what happens? Well, there are those that are righteous. Well, they go on to heaven. And what are those ones? Well, you know, come ye blessed of my Father. It says in the account, Matthew chapter 25, verse 31 through 46. What about these down here that depart off into Gehenna, the place where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched? The place that's described as the outer darkness. The place that's called hell in the scriptures. The real hell, the real thing. Well, they're told to depart from me, because they've been workers of iniquity. Now we think about all of this, and I realize, you know, there's probably room for some place in here where somebody could disagree on some point, and I understand that. But I hope we understand this. All of us here today are on this side of judgment, and we ought to do something about our soul's salvation to prepare for judgment to come. Yes, we ought to obey the gospel, but we not only obey the gospel, but be faithful unto death to receive the crown of life. There's a lot of things that are important that we need to do in order to make heaven our home. To be able to hear those words, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your Lord. Is there one here tonight that would indeed lay hold of salvation, become a child of God? I think everybody here tonight is, but if there would be one, would you do something about it tonight? And here's the other thing. If you are a child of God, please, please, here's what you need to do. You need to remain faithful. You need to remain faithful so that you can be prepared to await the Lord and await the judgment and be on the right side of things when that time comes. Turn to the song that's been selected. And if you have a need to obey the gospel, we would urge, exhort, and plead with you then to come. Well, right now, we together we stand and sing.